is War Baby with Dentata off of their EP Jesus Horse. So that was a song by War Baby. It's the end of Chips and Dip. So thanks for listening to my show. I'm here every week from 1 to 2 p.m. And thanks for listening to CITR. Up next, we have Language to Language with your hosts, Woody and Gunarji. So, yeah, stay tuned.
How much do you know about bikes? Everything? Perfect. Nothing at all? Even better. At the UBC Bike Kitchen, you can use our space and tools to do your own bike maintenance, get one-on-one instruction on how to fix your bike yourself, or drop your bike off for us to repair. You can also buy a fully refurbished, guaranteed used bicycle, or a variety of new and used parts and accessories. The Bike Kitchen is UBC's nonprofit, student-owned, full-service bike shop. We're located in the basement of the Student Union Building. Just look for the stairwell on the north side of the sub across from Gage Towers, or search for the UBC Bike Kitchen on Facebook. Stop by the Bike Kitchen, and then get riding.
CITR presents DJing 101.9. We offer people a way to learn about the fun of mixing, sharing music, and throwing events. Our workshops and studio access is free for students and members. No experience or turntables are necessary. Workshops from 4 to 8 p.m. are on Tuesdays in 212A in the Student Union Building at UBC. For more information, visit us at citr.ca or follow @CITRDJ on Twitter.
become a friend of CITR and get great discounts in the Main Street area at
Antisocial Skateboard Shop, Devil May Wear, Lucky's Comics, Neptune Records, RX Comics, Red Cat Records, the Regional Assembly of Text, the Rumpus Room, the Wallflower Modern Diner, and Woo Vintage Clothing.
Wow, it sure does pay to be a friend of CITR. To find out more, visit us in room 233 of the sub on the UBC campus, or go online to www.citr.ca.
Keep smiling, keep shining, knowing you can always count on me. For sure.
We'll be right back. Tatsuki, come on in. Welcome to Language to Language on 101.9 FM CITR here at UBC. Kaunsanga inudikya am kachakas diukwala kum. Tetlanas udi ijin hybrids ijin. In Haida, I'm called Kaunsanga. I'm from the eagle part of the people. And my crest is a two-headed eagle. And I'm from the village of Heidelberg, Alaska. Everybody calls me Woody. And my co-host here, she's the boss, actually, is Gunarji.
I like it when you call me that. The boss, yes.
You're the boss, lady, huh?
This is my first time, or my second time at CITR. First time was during the Red Jam Slam Radio Festival.
Yeah, when she was supposed to be here last week, she ended up driving in circles, get off the Bernard Street Bridge.
I was stuck in Canada way with my daughter Nimkesh. We were going around and around in circles. I was busy texting and talking to somebody on the phone, and then I finally looked up and I go, "What are you doing?" And she was going around and around in circles. So we think that somebody put some love medicine on us, and now we're confused. And we don't know which way to go.
Love does that. It's funny that way. But I don't have experience with that, so I can't say for sure.
No, I don't know either. It's the first time it's ever happened to me. Nobody ever loved me enough to put some medicine on me.
Maybe they're taking it off.
Yeah, it could be.
You could have been medicined up all your life to your eyeballs, you know, and didn't know it.
No.
But
no,
anyway,
confused. Still confused.
This is a new program we just started last week. It's called Language to Language. And so what we want to do is get people from different languages so we get to know each other, hear what our languages sound like. And I heard you asking about different kinds of music.
Yeah.
So you wanted to
play different music from different cultural backgrounds, you know, from we just heard from Japanese musicians, and hopefully we can tap into the music industry in different languages.
Yeah, I think, you know, once we start getting to know each other, we can start learning each other's languages. So that's what we want to do. Former Mayor Sam Sullivan has a program called Language Fluency, and this is where they bring people together and they start sharing each other's languages. And I went to one of those sessions, and they had somebody from Egypt who was speaking Arabic that greeted people in Arabic, explained how do you express gratitude, and then when you're leaving. And then there was a German from southern Germany, Chinese, Nishka, Simshan, and there was a couple others, but I think this is something we need to do if we're going to start getting along, is being able to greet each other. And if I greet somebody in Haida, if I see you and I call out, "Oi," that's like saying hello. Or I can be just a bit more formal about it, like to all you listeners, I'd say, Dalungwa. Dalung is all of you. Dalungwa. Are all of you good today? So Dalungwa, or, and then to answer, do you just say yes or no? Ang?
Ang.
Ang or anga?
Anga.
And if it's no, it's ge, not gay, but ge.
Ge.
Well, you can say ge, ge.
Ge.
Ge. So we say ge, and then when somebody's leaving, it's a little bit longer process of saying, Hus, which means again, Delunk, which is all of you. King song is to see, which means I'll see all of you again. So we even say that to people when they're dying, because all of life is a continuum. It doesn't just end when you go home. And while I said that, I heard on the news as I was coming here about 20 minutes ago, they announced that Nelson Mandela had gone home. That he was 95 years old, and so they were just starting to put it on the news. So that's how we talk about it. We don't say somebody died or they passed. No, they went home. And so he went home. So even when somebody's saying that, I would say to Nelson, Dunk King's, who's Dunk King's song? I'll see you again. But it's really much more than that. It's like saying, long ago, someday I'll see you. Which means, I'm looking at you the way you are right now. I see you 20 years from now. I'll still see you the way you are now, and I'll see you the way you are then. So long ago, someday I'll see you. But anyway, I'm doing all the talking here, and I have a T-shirt that says, help, I'm talking and can't stop. But we have a couple of guests here today. One, I met him in New Zealand, of all places, and he's a filmmaker, and he has a film that's going to be screening here on Sunday at the Woodward Center at the SFU World Theater, I think that's what it's called. And so he's just newly arrived from Arizona. Victor Matsayepsa, is that how you pronounce your last name?
Close.
Oh, close enough. And we also have Dorothy Christian. I think you finished your degree, haven't you? You're working.
I'm still working on it.
Okay. An MRS? Not just teasing. So anyway, Victor's got this film he's going to screen, and so maybe you can tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, they say we make up for our being short people by having long last names. So that's Masayisva. That's the last name. Yeah, I'm glad to be here. Na baik tuat piu panuat kasiang ye aik I bi pai tuat talava I yiset talunga, right? Is a greeting. I guess with Hopi would be talungva. Talungva.
Talolova.
Talungva.
Talolova.
So that's like morning.
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 Can you say it, Gunarji?
Say it again.
Talungva.
Talungva.
Talolova.
Sort of a nasal. Talungva.
Talungva.
Yeah.
Does that better?
Yeah.
Talungva.
And but I guess we greet each other like yes, have a seat or something obvious like yamwainam. Are you walking around?
Yamwayam, wayam.
Yamwainam.
Yamwainam.
But I think recently we've had so much. I guess request to say, well, how do you greet people? And I think we've recently begun to say lolma to
lolma?
Each other. Lolma.
Lolma.
It's beautiful, yeah. Lolma.
Lolma.
Yeah.
Lolma.
Lolma. So that's lolma. Kind of more recent, but typically in our homes and our places, somebody comes in and you say kate or yese. It's yes or yes.
Yes or yes.
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 And that essentially just means live.
Okay.
Just live.
So do your people speak from the nose and nasal
right.
area and where else? In the front of the teeth?
Uh-huh. Yeah. So I think I'll briefly talk about the language you mentioned here. We had a meeting at Hopi in September about timekeepers,
mm-hmm.
indigenous timekeepers, and that's what it boiled down to. These were people from South America, Central America, so essentially we ended up with speaking Ingles and Espanol,
mm-hmm.
and none of us really talked in our own languages. So I noticed a lot of cliché, just kind of things by not utilizing our own languages, but by using English and Spanish, we've all kind of gravitated into using these cliches, and we didn't really, I think, talk to the point. We were just trying to get beyond those sort of becoming meaningless, like sacred for one. I think that's sort of just become meaningless in English. And I can't say the same for your Spanish, but maybe it's the same there. So that was the most noticeable thing about that meeting, that we were talking about these intense, profound things in these two languages and going back and forth. And I didn't think it was a really productive meeting, but the exchanges were really invaluable. So that's what we're continuing right now by bringing up a video we did based on that meeting, and the content is time.
Well, one of the things I remember you mentioned that you were concerned with was how we perceive time now. And we, like you said, we use buzzwords, but we look at time now as time is money, which is personal power, whereas that's not how it's meant in our language. Mm-hmm. Where I describe myself as a tide watcher, you know, the ones who watch the time, the cycles go by.
Tell us more about timekeepers. Well, I don't understand that.
I think we did deal with it from the beginning, saying, well, what's the big deal? You know, we get by Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, January, February, March. 2001, 2002, we get by, right? Nothing seems to be out of place. We're perfectly happy with this. Maybe it's not the right name for it, but the Western calendar. But you realize that there are older calendars, not just from Europe, but in Mesoamerica. In particular, the Maya calendars, and they don't have a limited perspective on time. These are like 5,000-year cycles. So 5,128-year cycles. So the thought behind that is, how profound is this to look that far ahead? I mean, we have trouble enough just looking at our own lifetime, you know. But they're looking way ahead. So that one cycle ended this year, and a new one started. And so that's kind of what I'm following up on. It kind of sounds a new agey, but it's a new awakening. And I came up here last year with a program called Ritual Clowns, which had to do with you know, how we imagine the world's going to end, or what we know, anticipate how it's going to end. So I brought that up here last year, thinking that there'd be more activity in the indigenous communities with a recognition of that cycle, if not the Maya cycle, at least an idea of where we're at. And so I was thinking, if I showed that, whether I could make connections with people, how they were celebrating the new awakening.
Well, I think that many people misunderstood the meaning, because of the way the media portrayed it as the end of the world, and so we just bought into that idea and failed to think about the awakening as you're describing it.
Yeah, and the fact that it's 13 Baktun, right? So there were like 13 other cycles previous to that, you know? So it's not unprecedented to think that it's going to continue. It's a cycle on a spiral. It's another one. So that's kind of what we're looking at by time, and how, I mean, as I said earlier, what's a big deal? We get by. And the big deal is the time is our connection to the cosmos. We've lost the pattern and the rhythms of how the planets, how Venus, how the moons, how we interact with them. We don't pay attention to that anymore, and that's what's a big deal about time.
Well, also, if you know your calendar, it sort of fixes your place in the universe. You know where you are all the time. And when we start chopping it into smaller and smaller increments, this whole thing with reductionism that sort of started with Isaac Newton when he said we can measure anything to any degree of precision required. And if we break it down to its smallest component part, we can understand what it is. But one of my problems with that is a person says, I'm a forester, but that person studied a tree, but never a forest. So you can't really look at the world in terms of the, so much the details as you have to hear the whole story. So that's my problem with it. It's the quality of life, I think, really is tied to your conception of time. Or maybe the quality of the passage of time is tied to your quality of life. I'm not too sure which way. So how would you say it?
Well, the way I've learned it is it's time is energy. And it is when you do rituals and ceremony on a time basis, you're hoping or you're choosing a time where other natural forces will be present at that time. So if you do it at just any other time, you're not addressing the help you need to do things right.
Sort of like showing up at a party on the wrong day. I've done that too.
Yeah. Well, that's a critical point of it.
Yeah, well, that's it's something I was working with social work students at Calgary University. And one of the things I told them is that as a social worker, you're going to be really affecting people's lives. And there's one thing that we normally do that you don't do in your professional life. If I have something important to tell somebody close to me, I'm going to consider, is this the right time or the right place? But as a professional, you don't worry about that because time is more important. You've got in terms of getting paid for it, so you're not going to worry about that. You're going to say, sit down, we're going to do this. Whereas if you're sensitive to it, then the message can pass more clearly and more thoroughly if it's the right time at the right place. I think that's as simply as I can put it.
Mm-hmm. All right, so I would like to play a song, and it's called 12 Signs by Oz 12, and this is CITR 101.9 FM.
I mean, what the hell am I waiting here for anyways, man? I don't get it. In our days, there's 12 hours in our nights, 12 months in a whole damn year, 12 storehouses in our sight, but it's like 12 monkeys on 12 typewriters have been making up a parallel dimension, 12 armies and 12 tribes fight us as this whole world seeks redemption. We thought we knew it all, so we created our God so he could be in our likeness. Until we found out about travelers from abroad, that we wishing that we did not write this. Got the whole globe secretly worshiping the sun as our mother grows hot and bothered. Morning, noon, and night, the Trinity shunned, thinking a giant man in the sky fathered. Intelligent design, we hybrid creatures, but don't want to admit that fact. Now we wield some of the Big Bang speeches as protection and trigger backpacks. It's
Instead of sharing stories and finding creation, we argue and we kill each other. Every hood is the same from nation to nation. All my relations, my sisters and brothers. There's 12 hours in our days. There's 12 hours in our nights. 12 months in a whole damn year. 12 storehouses in our sight. But it's like 12 monkeys on 12 type of riders that been making up a parallel dimension. 12 armies and 12 tribes fighting since this whole world seeks redemption. Now the moral code stands as ethics rigged through, cause they got rules for their war and terror. Depends on what front you really claim to, as your mother's eyes drip mascara. Death become entertainment, entertainment is death. You can see it on the 6 o'clock news. They spitting at venom till they run out of breath, pretending rich people sing the blues. And if you scare enough people, it'll all become real. I was baptized for that same reason. Ask a starving person if they would not steal during the dark and cold winter season. The human condition come down to survival, and it seems happiness can come thereafter. Why you think they broke us up into these 12 tribes? Yo, we fight each other till they sounds of their laughter.
Well, brothers of Joseph. Well, tribes of Israel. 12 apostles. We talk about 12. Why 12? It's the 12 signs of the zodiac. The 12 hours of day. The 12 hours of night. God's son is chosen 12.
It's 12 hours in our days. It's 12 hours in our nights. 12 months in a whole damn year. 12 storehouses in our sight. But it's like 12 monkeys on 12 typewriters that been making up a parallel dimension. 12 armies and 12 tribes fighting since this whole world seeks redemption.
And that was 12 Signs by Oz 12, and this is Language to Language. I'm Gunnarji O'Sullivan, co-hosting with Woody Morrison. Woody? Oh,
you know, it's sort of funny when we start getting into numbers, you know, like we've got 12 months in the year, we've got 12 eggs to a dozen, the British have 12 whatever to a pound, and so everything starts running on that scale. Whereas when we start looking at our indigenous calendars, we start looking at different numbers. Like in Haida, we've got 13 months rather than 12.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a whole thing around numbers. When I was growing up, I remember I was told that there was certain numbers were really important. It was 4, 5, 9, and 13. But I don't remember why. I don't remember the significance of those things that I was told at that time. And so earlier, we were having coffee, and Victor was mentioning what we were talking about, 13, about mm-hmm. these events, rather than a cataclysmic explosion of Armageddon. You know, if they want to have Armageddon over in the east, then go ahead and go get it over with, you know, leave us alone. But we're talking about transitions, I think, rather than simply endings. So is that how you perceive it, Rick?
Yeah, and that you did mention that earlier, that the media kind of prepped us up to have this kind of grand movie finale, right?
Mm-hmm.
And media, if you remember that time, they weren't ready to go away because they were making money off of it, right? All their advertisements, so they were not looking for the end of the world, and that was the misunderstanding through a lot of the country. And what was more surprising to me was that more indigenous people didn't take advantage of this opening to really seize a moment and really take over their own lives and their own future on this clock. And that's why we convened that meeting in our village, Hotvela.
Hotvela?
Hotvela. To start that discussion again. Maybe we need to start putting this information out. And the thing is, with time, it had been like a privilege for the priests. So it was really like privileged information that only a few people had. And you can just imagine it, right? If you have to be the guy sitting up in a little tower or a little building watching the sun wherever it rises, that's a full day job, right?
Uh-huh.
Or if it's watching the sun, which is another way of keeping the time. At Hopi, they had a room where they watched the sun where it came in, marked against the back wall. And that seems to be the case in some of the Maya sites in Chiapas and points south. So it just happens to be that Maya has the most documented calendars on their various various monuments, so that people are beginning to make these calculations of when things happened. And I wish I had the perfect information in front of me on when creation began. And I think it was something like 3011 B.C. of August. But anyway, it'd be from 2013 minus 528 years. So the beginning day, according to at least three verifiable records, was when Venus lined up directly below the new moon. So that happened on May 3rd. Mm-hmm. So that same alignment happened 5,000 plus years ago. And that's what they mean by a baktun, a cycle.
Completion of a cycle.
Right.
The completion of a cycle.
See, that's what ours is too, a little over about 5,200 some odd years, because the Ice Age started 26,000 years ago, and in our calendar, that's five cycles. And so it comes out to exactly 26,000. And then there was another event 78,000 years ago, and that kind of coincides with 15 cycles of our tide watching. So when we start talking about when that, what was the Montezuma was Aztec, mm-hmm. his nephew Cuauhtemoc, when he told them we were coming in the time of the dark sun, that was in 1520, and he said that the dark sun would last for approximately 9 hells. In each hell was 52 years, for something like 486 years it would last, and then we would transition into this new one. And this is when our new awareness would begin again. We'd start remembering these things, but we don't know why we remember them. It just suddenly pops in your head. I know you were mentioning something like that, was you start knowing things.
We're speaking with Victor Masayasva, and he is Victor Masayasva Jr. He is Hopi. And are you a timekeeper yourself, Victor?
No.
No?
No, I'm not. But I'm concerned about it in my own village, because we are more and more just doing our activities out of convenience.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it is people work, so to have participants, we're kind of scheduling weekends.
Yeah.
And not really following when it's supposed to happen. It's when people have the time.
I see.
And and we know it's wrong. We know when the right timing is, but it just seems we're overwhelmed by people that, you know, what's like convenient.
Structures and systems, like school, for instance. I have a friend who's East Indian, and she had homeschooled her child until he was 10. And then he decides he wants to go to school now and be with the rest of the kids. He goes off to school. The first thing he does is cut his precious hair. Cuts it right off down to, like, next to nothing. And now she is tasked with having to get him up in the morning and get him to bed at night, and it's always a constant struggle. And she finds this really inconvenient, a part of her life. And I feel the same way about, you know, the working days and everything like that. And, you know, one of the things that I think is going to happen in the future, and this is way off of me, I'll be way off in left field, but because of the sun and the heat and everything, global warming, that I think eventually people are going to have to change their time and their structure, and they're going to have to work at night or work during the, they'll have to do everything opposite to the way we're doing it now, because it'll be too dangerous to go out during the day. The sun will be too hot. We have all these glass buildings up there popping up left, right, and center. And we're getting all of the reflection from the sun off of these buildings, which intensifies global warming, I would think. But, yeah. But I'm not a prophet. So don't believe everything I say.
She's pretty close, isn't she?
Makes sense to me that that's bound to happen.
Yeah, and I think that goes back to, you know, what's the big deal? You know, we're getting by Monday, Tuesday. And again, the big deal is to know your part in the cosmos. It's and we're gradually have gotten away from that. And you are the world. So what you do to the world, you're doing to yourself. So it's that identification back through utilizing time to get back into the seasons, watching where the moon comes up and adjusting to that and finding your place in those cycles. And particular for women, I think that'd be most obvious or very important to be aware of those cycles.
So there's a new moon out there today. Or tonight, and Venus is to the left of the moon.
It's really about the brightest.
And it's very close.
Right.
Yeah. What does that mean for the people?
Well, for us, this is when we start the count. Typically, you don't see it for about 2 days, and then about the third day, you can see it in the west, just a crescent, seated like that.
Uh-huh.
Then eventually.
You mean up and down?
Sort of like that angle.
Mm.
So that's when we begin the count. And typically it's a 16-day count for us when people schedule their activities. I mean, that's the optimum.
Like ceremonies or just daily activities?
No, ceremonial calendar, yeah. And it gets a little more complex. It's easier for me to show it with video, which is why we're using that medium.
Yeah, you've done a video and you've called it Timekeepers.
Right.
And it's going to be shown at SFU Woodward's building at the World Arts Theater at 2 p.m. on Sunday. Yeah. That's only a couple of days away on December the 8th. And how long is the video?
This is a beginning work, so it's only 15 minutes.
Oh, that's good.
And we really
short and sweet.
Yeah, we had to narrow it down. It was such a big topic, and it got really mathematically intensive. And it was hard to explain. Mm-hmm. You can imagine in two languages, and then other people with their own tribal ideas of time. It was really difficult.
Really?
So we kind of narrowed it down just to Hopi and the Maya stone calendar.
Uh-huh.
And even that is pretty complicated.
Who can we find in the video?
Who?
Yeah, who?
How do you mean? Like a movie star?
Or an up-and-coming?
Stellar performer?
A flute player?
Yeah, no, it's essentially the woman who's done the original work on the calendar and the new dates I mentioned.
Oh, yeah.
And I know.
Tell us the new dates again.
Sorry?
What are the new dates?
May 3rd.
May 3rd.
Yeah, and people had been kind of fixated on the solstice last year, right?
Yeah.
But it's actually, it needs those passages, those times for the moon to work through its phases, and that's where it ended up, May 3rd.
So what
that's
can
when
we
it started.
What do we do to prepare ourselves for May 3rd?
We are already past the May 3rd.
Oh, darn it. I missed
2013.
It. Okay.
No, I think it's just to take advantage of it, you know, and try to And we've been talking a bit about that, about going back to the principles that were present at the creation. And we all, I'm certain we all have those stories, but the practice itself has been forgotten. And some of them, we were talking briefly about, like, all the food had already been given to us at the beginning, and how to treat each other. All that had already been told to us at the beginning, and then we kind of lost it on the way.
Do you feel like you're speaking a foreign language? Because I feel like you are. We've moved so far away from this traditional way of thinking and being. It's a shame, really.
Well, what he was talking about, to put it simply, is that at the creating, we were given certain foods, and we were supposed to take care of them. Mm-hmm. But we haven't. In fact, I don't even remember what they are. I know of only one. But I have images of what they look like, but I don't know what they are. So we're going to have to start finding those things again, mm-hmm. Trying to find where we fit in the universe and how we're going to put everything back together. Because if we don't, we're going to, I don't know, might be erased, I guess.
Yeah.
So.
Well, Dorothy Christensen is in here.
Christian. I don't have a son. I have a daughter.
Okay. Christian daughter. Okay. Dorothy Christian.
That's one of the things that I'm researching, right, in my work. And it's looking at the role of language and our stories. Like, what does it mean that our children don't know those stories? Because in my case, in my community, 80% of us were taken out and put into white foster homes during the 60s scoop. So how many of the people in my community, my age and younger, know the coyote stories from Chequemec? Very few. You know, so it's like, if those things that were given to us at creation, at the beginning of our time, and so much destruction has been done. So it's part of the, what do we do to bring it back, right? So in my territory, they've been having storytelling sessions where the storytellers are actually coming out and we go and listen to them. You know, so it is part of relearning mm-hmm. those principles.
Well, what I've been doing is, with my teaching, is trying to decolonize the language, to take out those concepts, like what Victor was saying, like the word sacred really has no meaning. And even the word God has just become a name. It's not, doesn't mean anything. Some of the others, you know, when even the word respect, nobody even knows what that is anymore. But I think one of the things that happened here was that I was making certain assumptions, and Victor, I think, was making the other assumptions, that people knew what we were talking about. We didn't stop and think that not everybody was taught the way we were. Mm-hmm. And so now that's the hard part for me, is trying to help them catch up. And I think once we start helping them catch up, that those memories will kick in, and they'll start knowing things, but they need... See, in the springtime, when the bears come out of hibernation, there are certain plants they eat. One we call guaica. It's a very poisonous to humans. But they eat that plant so it can get their vital organs working again. Then they move to another type of root and they eat that. And so what we're doing is we have to give them that initial one to get the brains working and the memory again. But we're teaching them how not to remember all this technology. Now they, probably in a generation, they won't even know what they have names. You know, I don't know. So we're running against time here, Victor.
Well, that's true. I mean, technology can work against you or it can work for you. For instance, there's this new, what do you call it? This new thing. It's not called a thing, but it's on the phone. It's, what do you call those? It's an app. You go. It has a new app on there, and you can do auto wrap. You can press this auto wrap button, and then you can say whatever you want in it. If you have a song that you're learning, you can say, Let's see, Little Miss Contrary, Little Miss Contrary, and then it'll play it back for you as a rap song. So I've been thinking, I've been trying to get this auto rap going with Woody so that he could say a few words in his language, and then we could play it back as a rap song, because it's that kind of music that people are listening to, and that's what it's going to take to appeal to young people. And then the other thing that we could do is, like, you know, those little Build-A-Bear. You can build your own bear, and you can put, I love you, and then you can press, I love you, I love you, I love you, and it'll say it back to you 101 times. So what would happen if you built a bear and you put the language in that little microphone and you said what it is that you say? I could say Gaela Casa, which means thank you. And then that one child, my baby, from the get-go could be pressing that button and learning how to say thank you in the language. So those are the two ideas I have. What do you guys got? No, I'm just kidding. Film. We've got a film. And who produced the film called The Timekeepers?
I'm sort of the producer and the director, but my collaborators are Otomi, Nawa, and Maya.
Ah.
Filmmakers.
Nice. And how long did it take you to make the film?
Well, we just had the meeting in September. And so we've been just quickly trying to just get some of the key talking points together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're using this video for. To this will be our first stop. It's to see how much we really can share.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're still stuck with that. And it's the idea of audience. Do we just stay with our own indigenous communities? Do we just stay within our own villages? Or is this a public thing?
Yeah.
So that's where we're stuck right now.
So if you were to just share with the people of your own village, then you could share more of your culture, even some in your own languages, right. and ceremonies and things like that, and, right. and helping to revitalize that. But if you share with a broader community, then that will basically speak to how much you can share then. Is that the situation?
Yeah, and if the goal is what you do to the earth, you do to yourself, then yeah. you need everybody in
well,
the
world. We do, game. Yeah. Definitely.
So you'd have to do two versions, right, I think?
I think so, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, part of the problem of sharing with your own village is that assimilation has told them that power is someplace else. It's not here in our village. And so some of them will actually scoff at what we're talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
And some of them will attack us.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I've been doing is talking about how do we create community. And so by doing a radio show like this mm-hmm. one and the other two that we
yeah.
do, we're giving people these ideas. But it's sort of like you got a captive audience. People are listening, but they're not trying to get ahead of you so they could ask a question. They're listening. And so I think we can affect more people this way, to where when it gets time for them to ask questions, they're going to have the information they need to ask the question. But if we worked with them just as on a face-to-face thing, people are ready to argue all the time
mm-hmm.
or to question or to snicker or whatever. And so in some way, I think that this social media is a way of at least preparing the way, you know.
Yeah. It's a great way to reach people that, and it isn't as intimidating for them. They can sit at home and think about the things that we've talked about and try and learn some of the language that we share. It's less intimidating.
But some of our history in sharing our knowledge, I mean, it's a very precarious thing, as you know, because we have New Age people who come and take the knowledge and then start profiting from it, take it and go and sell it.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
well, the idea is to figure out how to get them to sell something that we want them to buy.
Trick them into buying our language.
Yeah. Well,
Just kidding.
We're just about out of time already.
We got like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
6 minutes.
So, is there anything else you would like to share while we got, you got the listeners there?
How about some language?
What? This is all our work that we all need to work on this. So, in the Hopi way, by suki hakamiyep, okio nangwai tahapai tamput son kaatswe mung vasiani. If there's even only one person out there listening with a good, very good heart, well, we are going to see something good from it.
Mm, yeah.
Well, you were mentioning there were three terms in Hopi that sort of made popular from those three films.
Yeah, Koyaanisqatsi is one of them. It's something, a film by Reggio, but that means a world that's gone out of balance, and that's mm-hmm. how it's been described. So that's been all over the world, that word. And another is Poatiuni, which we think we are in right now with the next few years when there'll be a lot more punishments. So that's another phase.
And that translates to?
Poatiuni is purifying. And I mentioned that at the screening last year, and one question I got, they clearly didn't understand what I mean, because they said, well, does it mean that these people deserved what they got? Remember with New Jersey where they had the big storm?
Oh, yeah.
And it was obvious people that had family there.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, to them, it sounded like I said, well, they deserved it. And that's not what I was saying.
What did you say?
I just told them there's these cycles. I mean, it's not. They're not happening because of you. It's happening to everybody, because we're all in this together.
Yeah, it's not a personal thing.
What people have done is they've taken religion and personalized it to think that God's walking around watching them all the time.
Twisted things.
Yeah. Well, you know, talking about God, you know, in seasons. On the last two shows I did at the other station, I was reading this thing called The Potlatch Before Christmas. It's written by this Haida woman. Don't snicker now. That's the first thing I would kick somebody out if I saw them doing that. Because you haven't heard it yet. But I'm going to read it anyway.
Okay.
This is The Potlatch Before Christmas by Pamela Ray Hewson. She's Haida from Alaska. 'Twas the great winter potlatch, a time for the clans to gather. Guests were arriving, the longhouse was all astir. Bentwood boxes filled with food were brought out with care. For potlatch preparations, the entire clan did their share. The little ones were a squirm in a soft, furry bed, while playing games loudly from the excitement aforesaid. The drums were all tuned and tested just right. Everything was set for celebrations tonight. Then out by the beach there rose such a song, sounding of a great people, many warriors strong. Away to the shore to welcome the new guests, wearing our best regalia, displaying family crests. An enormous canoe lingered out in the bay, singing their clan songs, for this is our way. Their torches they shone, we could see their crest clear, for carved on their canoe was that of a reindeer. The song's now completed, time for welcoming in. We then lit up the beach as one danced in a bear skin. The drums resounded in that crisp winter air, and a call from a shell horn, more dancers joined the bear. You've traveled from afar, come to warm up within, our chief then called out and welcomed them in. Swift, graceful paddles toward our snowy-rimmed shore, then landed with a hoo-ha, this clan of ancient lore. Saint Nick had arrived, the most jolly of guests. We knew of his regalia, and here is how he's dressed. With a bright red robe and a border of white, a reindeer in form lined, such a regal sight. The antlered headdress made A chieftain's crown, as symbols of peace, floated, that of Eagle Down. Then the drums announced the potlatch to begin. The feast was prepared, so we gathered within. A seat of the high caste was given to our guest. That is our tradition here in the Northwest. The crowd hushed as two dancers unrolled a large blanket screen. A drummer set the rhythm to this captivating scene. From the screen, antlers arose, portraying this ancient dance. Softly at first, bells were heard, while strutting their crest in a prance. The bear changed as two rows formed, and everyone shouted with joy. This the most favored dance of every girl and boy. More rapid than eagles, St. Nick's team made game, as he whistled and shouted and called them by name. Now Dasher, now Dancer, now Prancer and Vixen, on Comet, on Cupid, on Donder and Blitzen. Eagle Down swirled from the dancers as the bells began to chime. The children stood by St. Nick, for they knew it was time. One by one the children sat upon the great chief's knee, as gifts appeared from his toy bag, ushered in happiness and glee. Ho, ho, called out St. Nick. Ho, ho, we called too, as he tossed out sweet treats as celebration how it grew. Then of a sudden I heard on the roof the prancing and pawing of reindeer hoofs. A last wave from St. Nick, and up the smoke hole he rose, back inside his canoe before the bay had froze. But I heard him call out, here he transformed in flight. Merry Christmas to all, and to all a good night.
Good night. Yes, we've been speaking with Victor Masayesva Jr., and he is a Hopi man who's visiting here and will be showing a film called Timekeepers at SFU, which is located at 149 East Hastings Street at 2 p.m. on Sunday, December the 8th. Go check it out, Timekeepers, at SFU Woodward's Building at 149 West Hastings. And this is Time and Space. Thank you for joining us on Language to Language.
Okay.